Welcome to Wise at Work, the podcast exploring the intersection of science, culture, and meaning in the workplace. I'm Michael Taft, the producer of the podcast, sitting in for Corey Smith, who's currently on vacation. In this episode, Wisdom Lab's Meghna Majumdar interviews Arjun Arora. Arjun Arora is currently in residence at EXPA. He was most recently a partner at 500 Startups, where he actively invested and also led fundraising for the fund. Arjun was also the founder of Retargeter and bootstrapped the company to be in the top 100 of Inc.'s fastest growing companies list in 2013. Arjun advises various startup companies with strategic planning, monetization, and funding. He is also an angel investor, fund advisor to various funds, and an LP at 500 Startups. Arjun graduated from UC Berkeley with degrees in electrical engineering, computer science, and entrepreneurship and technology. And now, Arjun Arora, interviewed by Meghna Majumdar.
Thanks for coming in today.
My pleasure.
You know, I'm so excited for this conversation because whenever we've talked, there's this great alignment between your work and what you're trying to do in the world mm-hmm. and what we think and do at Wisdom Labs. You know, both of us are operating from this idea that business is a mechanism and a vehicle for changing the world. And as you say, shifting the current paradigm. Mm-hmm. And so I'd love to dive into that. Can you share what it is that you think this paradigm shift is that we're going through in the business world today?
Right. So I think with the business world in the past, we've focused really a lot on kind of value extractive behavior. It's been about, you know, everything from literally and figuratively taking, you know, materials out of the earth to now I think getting to a place where we're thinking about value creation and how we're doing that in a way that allows us to grow as humanity, as it allows us to kind of bring more awareness into the world, and also for people and organizations to continue to push forward in a way that doesn't extract value, rather creates value.
And what do you mean by creating value? I think it's super buzzwordy. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to have to use materials. We're going to have to use people's time, attention, resources to create value. So what is a business in this new world that creates value?
Yeah. So I think in the past, it's been a lot about how do you use up resources to create that value? So it's around, you know, transforming those resources in a way that ultimately harms and hurts. But I think what we're moving towards now is an opportunity to actually allow people and those resources to be grown or regenerated in the process of creating those things that we want to create.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that's really exciting for me as I think about this is this move away from this thinking of, oh, we're all cogs in a machine, especially mm-hmm. as human beings working in the world. And we're seeing it in our language as, oh, I want to bring my best self to work. I want work to be meaningful. It's not just about being part of a machine. It's mm-hmm. it's about creating something in the world that's personally meaningful and possibly also good for the world as well.
Right. Yeah. And I think that, you know, even operating a traditional business in a way that is positive for the employees, for the community, for the customers is in and of itself a, you know, huge step forward from just kind of the way we've done things in the past. And doesn't necessarily mean the focus of the business needs to be something that is positively impacting people or helping to push things forward. It's just the act of building and running a business in a way that is centered, grounded, and concerned with the people is really important.
Can you give me an example of this new paradigm type of company? Do they exist today?
Companies like this exist today. I think Salesforce and LinkedIn come to mind as two kind of immediate local examples. Salesforce has done a phenomenal job in providing a large series of kind of L&D efforts, a learning and development for their organization for professional growth, but also a big, you know, active concern for the personal growth of their employees, whether that be spaces dedicated to mindfulness or meditation or just frankly, you know, connecting with oneself, all the way to the actual language used by Mark Benioff in a lot of the, you know, Dreamforce conversations, I think, you know, really touch on the importance of this for not only Salesforce employees, but vendors and partners and customers in the ecosystem. And I think when we look at the work that Jeff Weiner has done at LinkedIn in, again, focusing in on the personal and professional growth of the employees at LinkedIn and even post-acquisition by Microsoft, I think it shows a true and genuine commitment to executing against this particular paradigm.
So these are great examples. Aren't companies still extracting materials? Aren't mm-hmm. they still using underpaid labor in different areas of the world? And I'm not saying it's these companies in particular, but this is still very present mm-hmm. in our economic ecosystem.
Absolutely. No, and I think that's very true. And this is not to, you know, deny that those things are happening. I think they absolutely are. And I think the current paradigm is going to remain, you know, for a while. But I think what we are seeing is the beginnings or the flowerings of a new paradigm. And that is something that needs to be, you know, watered and paid attention to. And that will grow kind of independent of and next to what's happening while that older model decays. And I think what we need to do is focus our attention on folks who are operating in this new method and then, you know, really focus on supporting those folks. And I think the way that all change happens is that people point to, you know, the folks on the side and say, oh yeah, they're totally crazy. They're doing some new wild things. And then eventually that becomes real and starts to grow and build. And then the old paradigm kind of falls away. So I think we're very much smack dab in the middle of that cycle and kind of that archetype of how change or tectonic shifts happen. And so I'm excited about it.
Growth at all costs in a biological system is often seen as a parasite or mm-hmm. a cancer.
Right.
And so there's that kind of jarring metaphor that's right. available for us in terms of the growth at all costs, only shareholder value, quote unquote, kind of business model. And now we are moving towards something that is about, let's create a working and diverse ecosystem.
Yes. I think that's absolutely right. And I think that's the shift that's happening right now. And I think we'll hopefully continue to see more of those thriving ecosystems. There's a great TED Talk around this concept of, you know, what's the right level of growth and how do you get to an ecosystem that is self-sustaining? And I think that's kind of the modality that we should be focused on achieving. And so it's not growth at all costs. It's not that kind of cancerous growth. It's actually how do we get quickly to an ecosystem that is self-sustaining and continues to thrive. So I think the hyper growth is still very important because it allows us to get there fast. But once we get there, how do we create an ecosystem that is, you know, thriving and not eating up, to continue to use this metaphor, everything around it, but is rather self-healing and continues to grow.
So what are the signs of that? What are the signs that we're going to see that we're on the right path?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. I think ultimately, if we're finding organizations that support the people that are in it, that support the customers, that support the marketplace, that aren't necessarily obsessive around, you know, growth at all costs, but also are comfortable hitting plateaus, right? I think that's what's really important, is that there are periods of time where it's okay to be, you know, flat in the growth trajectory. And if there isn't a huge concern and hubbub inside the organization around that period, but rather saying, okay, this is an opportunity for us to pause, reflect, understand where we are, and then from there decide to continue to grow if that's appropriate, that's kind of the right way to potentially see if an organization is doing that correctly. The inverse of that is, oh my God, we're having a down quarter, let's cut or fire or reinvest in places that don't make sense, and let's drive towards that growth at all costs.
Yeah, and I love that addition to, what is that new model company is one that's okay with its plateaus, mm-hmm. of using plateau time as also creation time. So what does the future of work look like with this difference in paradigm of mm-hmm. wanting to make an impact on people and communities, not just extract value from the resources a mm-hmm. business uses?
Right. So I think the future of work looks like a group of people coming together to solve a problem and doing so in a way that not only solves that problem, but also helps the folks that are running and looking to solve that problem. So to be very specific, if you're in an organization going forward, leadership will have to spend time, energy, and resources on supporting the people in the business just as much as they're supporting creating something for customers. And that combination of both being employee-centric and customer-centric and market-centric, so to speak, mm-hmm. or investor-centric will be really important.
Yeah.
In the past, I think we've been stuck on just providing shareholder value as the core driver, but I think a more holistic approach going forward will be better.
what becomes shareholder value in the future of work?
Yeah. So I think one of the things to look at on the investing side or on the LP side is even shareholder value itself is being redefined. In the past, it was just profit for profit's sake. But now I think we're looking at things like patient capital, or we're looking at folks who are very cognizant, folks meaning investors, who are very cognizant of how that capital is deployed and the impact that that capital has in its deployment. So not just limited to get me the highest net IRR possible, but rather what are the other things happening with that capital and how it's deployed.
And is this really a conversation, or do you feel you're three standard deviations yeah. out?
I would say that, I am probably two standard deviations out. And I think that's the space where I like to hang out. I'm an early stage investor and enjoy being kind of at the cutting, bleeding edge of innovation, both from a technology standpoint, but also from a business model and culture standpoint. So I think, this will eventually percolate into other places in the ecosystem. But for now, I would say, yes, this is probably, two standard deviations away. But we are seeing LPs that are more focused on impact investing. We're seeing more patient capital. We're seeing folks who have a concern for things outside of just, pure profit. So this awareness is certainly in the ecosystem, and it'll take a little while to, percolate through.
Mm-hmm. It's exciting that you're only two standard deviations out and not three.
Right.
And I think what you're pointing at is this transition moment, because we are in this not only paradigm shift, but a really rethinking of what work can be and what our workplaces can be. And so can you talk a little bit about how you're noticing the stress of the moment and the stress of transition?
Right. Yeah, so I think a lot of employees and just people in general inside of organizations, all the way from senior leadership to folks on the front lines, there is a tremendous pressure to continue to push and grow kind of at all costs. And I think that is in some ways a reflection, or the peak reflection, of the past paradigm, in the sense of, growth at all costs, value extraction, keep pushing, provide as much value to shareholders on a quarterly basis as humanly possible. And I think we're just seeing the edges of that paradigm at this point in time. And I think that is a lot of the stress that we're feeling today is a reflection of that mimetic being played out to its unfortunate kind of peak.
I love this idea of paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. I took a few courses in the history of science and Thomas Kuhn and all of that. And what a paradigm shift really is, all of a sudden, we see through a new lens. Mm-hmm. We go from the earth is flat to the earth is round overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're talking about in terms of value extraction versus value creation is that tectonic of a shift. And I guess, what are some signs that this is actually taking hold? What are some signs that we can actively look at right now, objectively look at right now, that says this is what's going on?
Right. No, absolutely. I think what is leading us into this, or showing us that this is possible, is that folks from, again, a variety of different polarities, or let's call it left brain and right brain, are looking at this together, but both from very different perspectives. And I think we're hitting on some objective truth that's happening. So specifically, if we look at folks like Peter Thiel and Elon Musk, they're very focused on improving the cultures of their organizations and spending time and energy on things like EQ. And then also on the other side of the spectrum, so to speak, are folks like Jeff Weiner and other kind of leaders who are very focused on more of the right brain approach to this, very intuitive, very emotionally driven, very cognizant of the cultures that they're building. But both of them are getting ultimately at the same thing, which is that if we take care of the personal and professional growth of our employees, this will lead to stronger business results. And that means companies that grow faster, companies that outdo their competition, and that are able to get to this kind of hyper growth stage, particularly in the startup or early stage technology ecosystem. Those that operate this way, whether they be from the Thiel school or whether they be from the Jeff Weiner school, are both coming at the same thing, which is be incredibly authentic, take care of your employees, present a clear vision, and care about people's personal and professional well-being.
That's a really fascinating juxtaposition. Also, they're trying to accomplish the same thing.
Right.
I don't think it stops with their companies and their employees. I think they're driven by really making an impact on the world. And I know the word impact is overused, but really changing the experience of humanity through their work.
Yes.
I think that is what drives a lot of these leaders. And it's so helpful to think about them as different expressions, a left brain expression, super analytical first principles, kind of approach versus a more compassionate, thoughtful, intentional, dare I say, mindful approach. Mm-hmm. And it's trying to do the same thing, which is improve human experience. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the game. And I guess my question is that what's going on in value extraction mm-hmm. and the Industrial Revolution being the peak of that? Mm-hmm. It did change human experience for better and worse.
Sure.
And so in what ways is human experience changing, and in what ways can value creating companies accelerate that?
So I think the human experience is changing in that people are learning more about themselves as time goes on. I think people have a larger awareness about how they show up in the world, and that's being driven by a lot of different things. But I think, tying it back to kind of the business, growth side of things, one is able to do that both in a professional setting or even in a personal setting. I think that leads to, stronger business results, which then reinforces the desire for leaders to invest in those things because they're driving stronger business results. And so I think it's a virtuous cycle in that once people show up in a, let's call it better way, you see performance improve in businesses, which then gets business leaders to reinvest in those things. And that hopefully, that cycle continues and that spiral continues upward.
So when you say better results, what mm-hmm. are these results? Because I know what results mean in the value extraction world. It's profit. Mm-hmm. What are the business results of mm-hmm. value creation?
Sure. I mean, I think ultimately it's also still profit. And I think that is one of the key drivers. But I think it's also purpose. And we talked a bit about that before. So I think it's how do you both push more profit down to the bottom line? And that may be spread out differently. It may be in a crypto universe, it could go to the token holders. In a more traditional structure, it would just go to VCs and or the LPs that back those VCs. But I think that profit is certainly kind of a core driver in the business ecosystem, just how that's distributed and shared is changing. And then also purpose. So an alignment with whatever that purpose is for the organization, further and fuller alignment against that purpose. So whether it be Patagonia that's creating sweaters or, a company that is doing display advertising, ultimately their purpose is around those things. But how that's manifested in the world is also something that improves.
Yeah, I'm really starting to get what you're pointing at in that moving from value extraction to value creation, both are driven by profit, but what happens to the profit afterwards is different.
Yes.
And in the value creation world, once there is profit, it is shared in different ways.
Yes.
And where before it was centralized and it was the owners who kept most of the value, now there's a possibility of really democratizing that. And that's what's happening. And that's why these new technologies could be very exciting.
Absolutely. And I think this is playing out not just in storing things on your computer, but actually the way that money moves around the world. And that is, to date, it's a very centralized approach to how capital is created and distributed. And I think the shift is going to, in the next 5 to 10 years, going to be very, very powerful. I think there's ways in which we fully don't even yet comprehend how that's going to impact things, but I'm excited about it.
So how will businesses need to look when the financial complex is more distributed like that?
Right. I think one thing that it'll enable is that more microtransactions across a variety of different people or entities, which will allow people to not necessarily have to be tied down to a particular job in a single kind of 9-to-5 sort of an environment. I mean, we're already seeing this with kind of the rise of the 1099 economy and some of those part-time folks that are stacking together variety of different gigs to make it work. But I think with the rise of the blockchain and particular the ways that certain cryptocurrencies are going to move, it's actually going to really enable that at scale. So the ability to do even small actions of work can be compensated in ways that weren't possible before. And that means that more folks can move towards a freer agent lifestyle, so to speak. And that'll be, an interesting shift that happens.
But do you think that may only affect people who are already relatively affluent? Does it require an internet connection to be part of that? Or could it really impact all communities in every corner of the world?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it absolutely can impact those. And I think the rise of mobile penetration now, I think we're seeing it in sub-Saharan Africa. There's new interesting crypto projects that are being formed that are building everything on top of a very simple feature phone that many folks now have. So I think it's certainly not limited to affluent, high throughput internet zones in the Western world. It's showing up already today. And in some ways, those places are going to have technologies earlier than some of the coastal areas, you know, where we think a lot of technology innovation happens.
Having a job means a lot. Mm-hmm. To people. It gives a lot of identity of I belong with this organization, I have this kind of title or status in right. the organization. And so the current structure of having a job, having an employer, is very stable. It helps us move through the world because we know we can define ourselves. And what you're talking to is there's a world where job doesn't mean what it means today. Mm-hmm. There are things we do to bring financial resources into our world, into mm-hmm. our systems, into right. our bank accounts, if we still have them in the future. And then there are other activities that happen. So I'm a little scared and excited for that kind of world. And is that really what people are starting to look at least in Silicon Valley?
Sure. I think in the past, even today, people feel like they have to be defined by their job, or there has to be this particular mechanism by which I connect with the world and by which I, you know, bring financial resources to myself or my family, as the case may be. But I think that paradigm or that belief system is shifting in the sense that, you know, do I need to go into a 9-to-5 job in order to bring financial resources? Do I need to associate myself with a particular group as a mechanism of defining myself? So if those two things start to shift in that, one, I don't need to go to a 9-to-5 job to, you know, bring financial resources home, and two, I don't need to go to a workplace to define who I am, then are there other modes of defining oneself? Are there other groups, organizations, online communities, physical spaces that allow that to happen? And then on the other side, are there other ways to bring financial resources that may be, you know, let's say blockchain driven or maybe more gig economy driven? Those are all concepts that I think we're going to see more of in the future.
And the skills needed to navigate this are awareness.
Yes.
And attention. Mm-hmm. And really having that connection to what one's deeper purpose is or why they're doing what they do in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Hi, it's Corey, co-founder and CEO of Wisdom Labs. At Wisdom Labs, we're helping companies become wiser workplaces. To create this positive impact in organizations, we cultivate change at the level of the individual, team, and company culture. We see businesses as the biggest lever for positive social change at scale. After all, business still holds the most power and influence in our world. And as individuals, company cultures, and entire stakeholder networks become more wise, we all benefit. To learn more about Wisdom Labs, check out wisdomlabs.com. Thanks for listening.